Lynn Sorensen. Hello, Lynn.
Hey, hello, Phil.
And how are you? How are you able to stay inside? Are you inside?
I am inside.
My apologies to keeping you inside. I think I might have something to do with that. It's a gorgeous day. Let's have an update first. What is our status just in Jefferson County? We're not waiting for the next case of COVID-19. It's been, 2 months almost?
Maybe about 6 or 7 weeks. They're about, as of yesterday anyway, there were 30 cases or 30 tests that were pending. So I'm sure there'll be new numbers out today, but there's been over 1,500 people tested thus far. So the numbers are going up, and still we're at the 30 positive cases total.
So we're opening up as a county not entirely until, as I understand it, next week. Clallam County on Monday, which I guess means we will as well. Kitsap County already open, and there were some contingencies upon our opening based upon those counties. Don't you think we're going to be at greater risk when our adjacent counties are open?
Well, yes, but if people follow the practices of social distancing, wearing a mask and hand washing, et cetera, we'll all be fine, provided that isn't a political statement.
It is not a political statement.
We could run into trouble.
You, by the way, are Lynn Sorensen, RNBSN. You make political statements. That was a medical statement, right?
Sure, Phil. Whatever you want.
At any rate, Dr. Locke has instituted we're going to dabble into politics. We'll see if you drag me into politics again. Dr. Locke has instituted a voluntary mandatory policy regarding the wearing of masks. In San Juan County, policy there is mandatory with a possible misdemeanor charge against those who do not wear masks. So how do we enforce? How do they enforce? I don't know.
They enforce. But as Tom Locke had said earlier before the directive came out, he wants to keep this as, asking people to do their best and trying to be positive about it rather than punitive. And I think that's a good way to start. And there will always be people that won't want to follow the directive, but I think it's too much to ask for any policing of that. I would hope that peer pressure would help, but maybe not. The person wearing the mask should be, it's a message of that I care for my community as I see it. And if they're following the other practices and mitigation of hand washing and social distancing, then we're going to be okay.
I sent you a political cartoon today. I could have sent you another David Horsey cartoon from the Seattle Times. It's a rather ferocious-looking man, and it seems to be men for the most part, pointing his finger at a smallish woman. He says, "Are you afraid of a little bitty virus?" And she responds, "Are you afraid of a nice soft mask?" There does seem to be not only a red state, blue state, Trump, non-Trump divide here, but it seems to be also male-female.
Oh, I don't know that that's particularly true, but yeah, the men with guns certainly were impressive in Michigan in the legislature there. I don't understand it. It's getting, it's weighing heavy on me, all this divisiveness, and it hasn't gotten any better, and this is just one more thing that people have rallied either for or against, and it really, I think it's silly if it wasn't so true and happening. I think it's just too much for me to believe that that's really the case, but it certainly is there, and it keeps being ramped up by our current administration, by Trump refusing to wear a mask, and whereas him wearing a mask would just from the beginning would have settled everything. The non-issue wouldn't be an issue. So,
yeah, it's certainly something that should never have been politicized, and one would, here again, the David, did I send you an I don't think I don't know if I did or not, a link to a David Brooks editorial today, but talking about how, well, I will send it to you then, or maybe you can find it on the New York Times website, just how much we need a leader now and how much we don't have one. And we would want it to be a leader who will bring us together. We have one who wants to take us apart. And I guess enough about that. You wanted to talk about, oh, actually, a curious question I have about masks here in Jefferson County. Mm-hmm. I think that we've well trained ourselves. We're pretty well mask trained. As I go about, I'm pretty impressed with how many masks I see on faces. I think if I went indoors, I would see more. I don't go indoors much except at home. But how about people coming from out of the area who don't know that we have now established a custom of wearing masks? People who come without them, is there a way of getting masks to them, or we simply have to accept the fact that they don't have them?
Well, if they don't have them, it would be nice if, say, at the visitors center, there were masks that they could pick up and take with them.
Oh, really?
But I do know there's a lot of people, women in particular, sewing masks. I think it's probably over 5,000 that have been sold and given away. And I saw women up at the farmer's market on Saturday. They were kind of on Lawrence Street in front of Lonzo's that were giving masks to people that stood in line socially distanced and, giving out a mask for their size. And these people that have been making them, I think they're some of our unsung heroes because they aren't getting reimbursed, although I think there was a grant that was given them maybe about $5,000, and that might have come from the Jefferson Community Fund, but I'm not sure. But to provide them with the things that they need. But those sewing machines have been just churning them out, which is fabulous. So if there could be some at the visitor center, even just the paper mask for visitors to grab on their way out, that would be great.
And that is an excellent idea. You wanted to talk about vaccine nationalism, and you sent a link to an article. I'm going to read a couple of sentences from it. Quote, "The race to defeat the coronavirus can be viewed in two very distinct ways. One is based on international cooperation, with a vaccine treated as a global public good. The other is competitive, a battle between nations that's being described as vaccine nationalism." Why does this interest you?
Well, again, it's just a continuation of the nationalism that is being felt here in the United States and also other countries, too. But, you know, it's an us against them battle, essentially. And, who's going to develop the vaccine first? And whoever develops it first, they and the pharmaceutical companies will decide who gets the vaccine first and who's second and who's third. And I know that the European Union has been trying to do a worldwide vaccine production scenario, but Trump is saying, it's U.S. and we're going to go, warp speed ahead to get this vaccine developed. And again, it's America First ideology. And China, too, is also in competition. So those are the two biggest superpowers competing, although China has given money to the European partners, and they were saying that there's Oxford University in Britain is working on a vaccine trial that looks pretty promising. They're partnered with AstraZeneca, which is a Swedish-British multinational drug company. Well, the U.S. government has also announced that it's providing billions of dollars to AstraZeneca as well. But there are so many international players now, and the challenge is going to be, who's going to get it, the capacity of the combined disagreements about who could, should get first, second, or third in line. And I just, it's going to be yet again another battle. But it sure be nice if it could come out to be, we're going to have a great production, and this is how we're going to dispense with it, and the price will be right, and rather than, you know, the most powerful countries that the pharmaceutical companies will cater to. I mean, it's yet another political battle coming down the line. I'm hopeful that, I mean, I don't think any vaccine can be created and made safe to be given before the November election, because I would hate to see that as something that would possibly benefit the administration to get back in power. So
there's
another political statement for you.
There is another political statement. Yeah, indeed. There's also, by the way, another player in the whole matter, and that is the pharmaceutical companies. Big Pharma is they're often referred to. So there's the struggle among nations, which is primarily, it seems like, a struggle. I don't know who's playing in this game. I'm not sure China is playing to the extent that the our administration is, but at least China versus the United States. But ultimately, these vaccines or this vaccine will be developed by a private company with private gain in mind.
Yes, it's true, but the funding will come from all kinds of countries. I mean, these are billions and billions of dollars going into this research, so everybody's going to have a little piece of it, and whoever can, I don't know how it will be determined who gets to decide, but you're right, it'll probably be one pharmaceutical company that will come up with the best vaccine.
Do you think that those who are deemed to be greater at risk should get the vaccine first?
I don't know how that would play out. I wouldn't want to be the one making that decision. It'd be nice if it could just be, you know, everybody in the world could get it at some, you know, at the same time. But that's not going to happen. And how to get it, again, I think this is something we talked about last time I was on, about the ideal vaccine would be actually something that could be taken orally, wouldn't have to be refrigerated, can be produced mass quantities and distributed all around the world so that everyone can have it.
So,
yeah, and the world doesn't work that way, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, we're going to learn something about how the world works, I think, once there is a vaccine. And that won't be for a while. And in the meantime, the pandemic will continue in waves, we're told. Something I would like to talk with you about, because I know you are a healthy individual who looks after your health. What can we do as individuals to prepare ourselves for the next wave, to make ourselves physically stronger?
Make yourself physically stronger. Well, got to get your mind, keep your mind healthy too, as part of that. I would say, first of all, turn your radio and well, your radio can stay on as long as you're listening to music, but turn the TV off, the regular channels anyway. That can help your mind feel less anxious, and get exercise, go out, talk to your friends if you can't hang out normally as you used to. At least keep communication open. And, I mean, it's a hard thing to stay at home and not be out there socially. It's all a huge experiment, and so we have to open at some point, and it will be something to see how it all works out. And I think it will work out better in some places than others, but I think keeping that sense of community and that we are in this together. I think this was something that Michelle Sandoval actually said, weeks ago, that we aren't all in the same boat, but we're in the same storm, because some of us have more resources than others. Some of us, you know, have a nice place to live in. Others, you know, are staying in shelters. I mean, there's a huge disparity between how everyone is seeing this, but we all have to deal with it in one way or another.
I would hope
we had learned something from this first wave, and hopefully we don't have to have a second wave.
Lynn, this is the last, this is, I don't believe, the end of Through Science to Health, but it's the end of our conversation because it's the last tossed salad. So I will tell you that, one, it's been a pleasure getting to know you better this way. And I look forward to that beer that we're going to share maybe sooner than later at the Poorhouse and getting to know you and getting you to meet Emmylou as well. So we have a future. Through Science to Health has a future at a different time, I believe. And you and I, let's get together and be social someday.